from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Job retraining is a big central part of the Obama administration's economic recovery plan. Billions spent, billions more to come. Unemployed? Get retrained. Get a new job. That's the idea. So how's it working? Well, it's not so simple. Predicting the labor market, the market for jobs, is never easy. But for individuals and for the country, there is a lot hanging on this. This hour on Point, job retraining in a jobless time. We'll look at how it's working. You can join the conversation. Is this you? Unemployed? Retrained? Did you find a job, a good job, any job? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And I should say it's good to be back with you all. Thanks to Brother Wade Goodwin for filling in while I was spending some time off with the family. Sweet time. With us first today from New York City is Ianthe Jean Dugan, senior staff writer at the Wall Street Journal. She had a big piece in the journal last week, headlined, U.S. Faces Uphill Battle in Retraining the Jobless. Ianthe, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks.
First, tell us about the effort that is going into this, has gone into this. How much money, how much effort?
Well, the government spends about $18 billion in the last few years on about 47 different training programs. When you lose your job and you start looking for help, a lot of people have trouble finding their way through this maze of programs that's available. And typically the state steers you to, some training dollars that may or may not be available, depending on your circumstances.
Now, the idea of the government helping Americans retrain when they've lost jobs is hardly a new one, you report. It goes all the way back to the JFK Kennedy administration.
That's right. It's decades old, and the questions about it have been going on for decades also. People have always wrestled with whether or not it's valuable and how to make it more valuable. And now it's just more important than it's been perhaps ever, given that this is, it's a big topic, obviously, in the election, and also there's more money going into it than ever, and of course the job picture is worse for a lot of people than it's been, so there's all these factors converging that makes this a very hot topic. It's really one of the centerpieces of the Obama administration's economic redevelopment plan.
Though I guess we should say job retraining as a big policy with bipartisan support has gone right on through Republican and Democratic administrations over the years.
Oh, yes, definitely. A lot of it thrived under the Bush administration. But what's happening now is there are more people who are signing up for it. So there may be as much money available or more, but not per person. So it's a little bit deceiving because there's actually less money available per unemployed person than there was in the past. So it's getting a little bit tougher to use it. Some people are finding that they can't get training funds because they've just run out.
Now, Ianthe, the way your story on page one of the Wall Street Journal was framed up, it was kind of as if to suggest that there's a lot of money being spent and it's not worth it. What I took away is the general framing here, but it wasn't so clear to me in your details and your facts that that's the case. I mean, you do have people getting jobs, by no means everybody, but what's the case?
I wouldn't say that it's not worth it. I think that most people who study this, a lot of people would agree that it's the way it's distributed. You know, it's such a patchwork of agencies across the country that distribute it in different ways. It's done on state and local levels. And it all has to do with geography and the economy in your local area and how well the agency that's distributing their share of the funds is doing. There are some places where training actually does work when, the first factor is there are actual jobs. I mean, in the hardest hit regions, there's just not a lot of hope.
Right. Retrain all you want, but if there's no economic pulse, it's hard to find a job.
Exactly. And there are some places that are doing a great job of working really closely with companies and employers to figure out, okay, what exactly do you want us to train these people to do? Let's not just look at a sheet of paper and see what the statistics say are available. You know, and you line up, all these people that come out and, you know, go into some medical field that then has no jobs waiting for them. But there are some areas where people are getting trained for jobs that actually are panning out when they're working closely with an employer. They're getting on-the-job training. That's important also to get the experience. And if they go through it rather quickly, I mean, if you go through a training program for 2 years, the economy is going to change a lot by the time you get out. So it's very hard to predict what the hot job is going to be that distance down the road.
Yeah, in a fast-moving economy or an economy where there's not much going on, it's got to be, it's like skeet shooting here, sort of following that moving thing and trying to hit it. Now, you describe it as a patchwork at state and local levels, though, of course, often people say, well, you want programs like these to be down at the state and local level where they're more likely to know what's going on. But there have been big pushes for particular industries that have emerged in a lot of these. What kind of industries have been targeted in recent years? Where have people been encouraged to retrain?
Well, the government has put a lot of money into alternative energy training, for one example. And there was a lot of hope that, you know, all these wind farms would start developing, and they did, but they haven't, for various reasons, hit their stride, and so the demand has been a lot smaller than the government or anybody has projected. And actually, there have been jobs lost in the wind industry.
But there's also been healthcare, transportation, high-tech emphasis?
Yeah, I mean, there are also companies that are just trying to transform themselves. They're in industries that are shrinking. I spoke to a yacht manufacturer, for example, who is training all its own workers to reinvent themselves and make wind turbines instead because the boat business was slipping. And then they got all these people retrained with government funds and couldn't make a go of it because then their wind turbine orders started slipping. So it's a really tough line to walk, and you know, the government and local agencies and businesses are all trying to work together to figure out how to make this more efficient.
What's the measure for deciding if this is, things are successful here? I mean, you report that in the year that ended June last year, 78% of those who went through the dislocated worker training program said they wound up with jobs within 3 months. Now, these days, that sounds pretty good when you've got people out of work for many, many months.
That's a good point. And there are studies that show that people go through training of any sort have a better chance of finding a job than those who don't. For one thing, it's good to have something on your resume showing that you're building and you're looking for something, and you're not, there's not just a big empty gap.
We weren't just watching Jeopardy at home.
Yeah, exactly.
But only 38% of them said they landed the kind of jobs for which they were trained, but you're saying, well, maybe it's still worthwhile being in a program anyway.
I think so. I mean, a lot of people who study this seem to think that they're better off, but that there are a lot of fixes that could be made to the program to make it more successful.
What's the general critique here? Are people saying we shouldn't be helping retrain? The government shouldn't be in this business? Paw their way through?
There's two schools of thought. Some people say, you know, the government should stay out of the way and let the, you know, just let the market pick the winners and losers. How does the government, you know, stand there and pick the jobs of the future? But there's a lot of people who believe that, no, of course, the government should help workers who have stumbled. I mean, some jobs are being, you know, shipped overseas and manufacturing and such, and you can't just let people sit there, you know, in these fields that are never coming back and not help them at all. So this is the other school of thought. So it is, I mean, they're stepping in and trying to offer a helping hand to people who are out of work, are in fields that will never come back, and are struggling to figure out what to do next. But it's a lot easier said than done.
Of course, a lot of people go for retraining with or without the government's help. You know, how different is that path if you just take it on yourself to go out and say, I'm going to get some new education, some new training here? Is that different financially for the unemployed who take that path?
Well, of course, because you're paying for it. And also, if you decide to just stop looking for work and go into a college program or something, there are some unemployment rules. You know, you may not be able to collect unemployment while you're back in school, for example. So by sticking with this government program, you can also collect unemployment benefits while you're attending school and getting trained for something new. But I think a lot of people get out and are really surprised that they don't just walk out and find the job that they've now been trained for. Now, there are a lot of people in the healthcare field who think, you know, oh, healthcare, I'll just like pick which job I want to do in that field and I'll get my certificate and I'll be golden. But there are a lot of people finding out that, you know, you don't just get your degree or certificate in phlebotomy and go out and start drawing blood. A lot of employers are looking for people with experience, and there are a lot of people with experience looking for jobs. So this whole new, you know, this flood of workers who come out with these new programs, with these degrees, are not necessarily stepping into these jobs that on paper it looks like they should be.
By no means is it as simple as retrain and you restart and off you go. Ianthi, you gave us a big insight into this with your piece, and we thank you for joining us today. Thanks a lot for being here.
It's my pleasure.
Ianthi Jean Dugan is senior staff writer for the Wall Street Journal. Her big piece, U.S. Faces Uphill Battle in Retraining the Jobless. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about job retraining in a jobless time. We're spending a lot to do it. We're asking, is it working? Presidents have talked about this for a long time. President Obama did in April, and at Lorain Community College in Ohio, talked about the need for job training.
You've got growing industries in science and technology that have twice as many openings as we have workers who can do the job. That makes no sense. Openings at a time when there's still a lot of Americans, including some on this stage, who are looking for work. So we've got to do a better job training more people for the skills the businesses are looking for.
But there's a whole theme of skepticism out there. February last year, Rush Limbaugh voiced his frustration with the push for job training and retraining.
You know, one of my pet peeves throughout much of my broadcast career has been job training centers. I hear about the need for job training centers, job retraining centers, and I've always said, why do we need those? We already have schools. We send people to school. We send people to college. We send people to vocational schools. I know they don't graduate in a number of cases, and I know they can't even read their diplomas in some cases. But why does that mean we need job training centers?
Well, if they work, that would be justification. Are they working well enough? That's the question. We're going to hear from people who really are up close with this. Let's hear from some of our listeners and their experience. Patty in Queensbury, New York. Patty, thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What's your story?
Well, my story is I found out in March, I work for a Fortune 500 insurance company.
Yeah.
And in March, we got soft notice that our jobs were being laid off.
Okay.
And as part of that notice, we were informed that there was a Trade Adjustment Act that our company was part of, and we would be entitled to money for retraining.
Was that Trade Adjustment, was that because your job was getting sent overseas? Is that what that implied,
yes.
Patty? Okay.
Part of the functions that we performed were sent overseas.
Okay.
The company's been doing that for years. They just have slowly been sending stuff overseas and have been laying people off in waves. And in a previous layoff a couple of years ago, one of our managers had to testify before Congress in order to get our company included in it.
Mm-hmm.
But now that it is included, in additional layoffs, if there's outsourcing, we're entitled to be considered for the training money.
So are you in government retraining now, or you will be, Patty?
I will be. I'm working with somebody in my local one-stop doing all the documentation of the program I wanted to go into. I had to show that there's growth in that industry and also that my industry is declining.
What field are you targeting?
Registered dietitian, healthcare.
Okay. Do they have a program for that? And do they tell you it's promising?
Well, yes. I'm unusual. There's not many people that have, I guess, brought this forward so far. So that's why I'm working with this coordinator so closely to get approval for it. I'm not approved yet.
What do you think of the assistance you're getting so far from this government retraining program? How's it working?
If it pans out, I'll be thrilled because the internship is through colleges, and this college, when the costs are all said and done, it's about $17,000.
And the government will cover that? Is that what you're saying?
It looks like it, yes. I'm in a two-year track, and there's the Trade Act would in the first year give up to $10,000, and then in the second year up to $10,000.
So you're going to invest a lot in this in time.
Yes.
I mean, clearly you're going to have a big stake in this panning out.
Oh, yes.
What do you think the odds are of it working?
Oh, I think it's good. I think there's a demand for the registered dietitians, and because of the diabetes epidemic, there's going to be a great need for more.
Patty, it sounds like you're thinking it through well, and we hope it works out for you. I mean, sometimes it doesn't, but we'll cross our fingers for you. I appreciate your call. Carl Van Horn joins us right now from New Brunswick, New Jersey. He's a professor of public policy, director of the Center for Workforce Development at Rutgers University. Carl Van Horn, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
Talk to us just big picture about job retraining. What works, what doesn't, how well we're doing on balance?
Well, I think we'd have to say we give ourselves maybe a C+, maybe an A for effort. But as your previous speaker mentioned, it does work out very well for some people who can connect with an employer that needs someone with a skill, then can connect with a government program, figure it all out, and then happy ending. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen often enough. So one of the problems we have is just making these programs work more effectively. The other is, despite the fact that we're spending a lot of money, $18 billion is a lot of money,
Yeah. It's
not enough because the number of people who need help, who have been unemployed for a year or 2 years, really need retraining. And they don't need a short-term retraining program. They need a longer-term retraining program because in many cases, they're changing careers. They're not going from a job to another job. They're going to a completely different career. That costs a lot of money. And also we have, of course, technological change and all the other factors in the American economy that make it difficult for especially mature workers to transition from unemployment to reemployment.
Well, let's go to this basic question about whether or not this is something that the government should be involved in. The kind of suggestion from Rush Limbaugh there, I mean, you know, put your grain of salt in there. He's got his angle. But let the market work. Let people go out. If they need retraining, let them buy it. Let them find their own job. Is there clearly a role for government here or not, in your view?
Well, if you look at the even if you don't have any human concern about these people, let's leave that aside.
Well,
apparently Rush Limbaugh was leaving it aside.
Okay.
But if you care about it from an economic or fiscal standpoint, you'd have to be in favor of it. Because what happens when a person is unemployed? First of all, many of them are entitled to unemployment insurance in some cases for up to 2 years. So while they're on unemployment insurance and not getting retrained, they're using resources that we're paying for. Now, they need those resources, but eventually to transition to a job, they need retraining in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
Also, many of these folks will begin to just leave the labor market, begin drawing down on other social service programs like food stamps and so on. So
drop out.
Financially, it just doesn't make any sense if they lose their home, et cetera, et cetera. So I think there is an important role for the government to play in partnership with businesses who need workers. And, of course, employees or workers who are unemployed, they're putting their own time and effort in. So it's not like it's all the government doing everything for them.
When somebody gets laid off, what do they face? I mean, you know, people don't have a lot of experience with this very typically. Maybe they've worked somewhere for a while. Now they're laid off. Does it come to them? Do employers generally point them toward government retraining programs? Or do they tend to just scramble around and look for schools saying, we'll train you, you know, put down this much money, we'll train you for a new career, come on in? What's it look like from the perspective of a newly laid off American worker?
Yes, we've done a lot of research on this at the Heldrick Center following unemployed workers now since 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And for them, it's really a panic-stricken experience. Most of them are laid off without warning or hardly any warning. So they maybe have on average a couple weeks notice that they're going to lose their job.
Yeah.
Then they're out there facing this confusing labor market, a very uncertain labor market. Many of them probably don't know right away that they won't be called back. So they go through a frantic search. Many of them don't even know where to turn. There's a lot of information available on the internet, but some of that information can be misleading, promising a job or a training program is going to get them a job that really won't happen. So sorting this out is difficult. And what people need is an independent, unbiased, but well-informed resource. And you can find that in some communities, in the local one-stop that's run by the Workforce Investment Act. Other places you'll find it at community colleges. Maybe you'll find it in your church or synagogue. But the point is, you need some help. It's very difficult to navigate this labor market and the training and education enterprise, especially when you've had no experience perhaps for 10 or 15 or 20 years.
And only something like 10% of the unemployed actually end up getting government assistance for retraining, as I think I read you.
That's right. It's somewhat less than that. Now, many people pay for it themselves if they have the resources, and that's the other key point. People who lose their job, especially after they've been unemployed for some period of time, usually in 3 to 4 months, they're pretty much tapped out of their resources. They've mm-hmm. gone through their savings. Mm-hmm. They may be skipping credit card payments already, facing bankruptcy or perhaps losing their home. So it's not an easy thing for them to simply plunk down $10,000 to get a retraining program. They need some help.
Let's hear from listeners. Patrick in Ayer, Massachusetts. Patrick, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to add a little historical perspective. I actually called your show a couple times in past years when you've had programs like this regarding retraining and how people do in it. And I was laid off in 2009.
Okay.
And went through a retraining program through September 2009 through 2010 at a local community college for a biotechnology program. And was able to pick up a job in late 2010 and been there since.
Great. That's a good story. Now, was this government assistance that helped you get this training, or was this just your own initiative, Patrick?
No, it was through the Dislocated Worker Program that was funneled through the infrastructure in Massachusetts here, which we have called Section 30, which is where you were able to sign up at the job centers that they kind of look at the program you want to do, and if they think that it's going to be a positive outcome or if it's something that they already have had pre-approved, then you can get into that retraining program. And the Section 30 will also provide a additional, I believe, I guess I should check before I say this, but in my time,
yeah,
provided additional weeks if you ran out of unemployment to be able to finish your training. And it would pay through additional unemployment until the day you graduated, basically.
So in your case, it sounds...
Your program training ended.
Yeah, it sounds like a success story in your case, Patrick.
What's that?
It sounds like a success story.
Yeah, and I, you know, when I hear, you know, particular people like Rush Limbaugh saying things that he has no experience with and are patently untrue, it kind of aggravates me. So I just want to make sure that people know out there that job retraining does work if it's planned correctly, if the companies work with local schools to develop training curriculum that helps them get the jobs into the businesses that are located in that area. It's a win-win for everybody.
Patrick, I'm glad you've called in again, and I'm really glad it's worked for you. In fairness, we have to say it doesn't always, but then I guess it's like a little bit like going fishing. I mean, you can't be guaranteed you're going to catch a fish. But I'm glad you've got that job, and I appreciate your call. I want to go to Rick Stein for a second. He's in Milford, Connecticut. He was a senior engineer at Pitney Bowes, laid off 3 years ago, went through training, and, well, let's hear his story. Rick, thanks for joining us.
Ah, nice to talk to you.
Rick, tell us what happened when you lost your job. What kind of training did you find? What happened?
When I lost my job at Pitney Bowes, I decided I was going to actually try to retrain myself and go out and look at solar engineering and other type of renewable engineering type activities.
Right.
So I went and got retraining in Massachusetts, paid for it myself for solar installation, solar design, and stuff like that, and tried to start my own company.
Okay.
That didn't work out. And like the professor was talking before me, you know, you kind of get in this rut where, you know, you kind of like, you know, your money's running out. You're getting depressed.
Sure.
And I was lucky enough in Connecticut, there was a gentleman named Joe Carbone who is in charge of a thing called the workplace. And what Joe did was he found people that were called 99ers. These were people that were, used the whole 99 weeks of their unemployment, had nothing left, and reached out to us and said, hey, look, you know what, I'm going to start retraining you. I'm going to retrain you on how to search for a job, how to talk to people, how to interview with people, how to just start networking and getting yourself in the field to make yourself feel better.
Was this a government program or something else?
I think it's partially funded by the government, and Joe goes out and gets private funding.
So where did you end up aiming, and how did it work out?
What I did is I ended up aiming back to something I was comfortable, back into manufacturing. And through Joe's organization, I was able to get a job at a company called Beat Industries in Milford, Connecticut. And there was a little bit of a mismatch between what qualifications I had and what qualifications Beat needed, as far as like Six Sigma training, process training.
I mean, but they took you anyway. So they didn't require a perfect match. Presumably employers can also do a little training here to get the employees they need.
Yeah, but what ended up happening was they identified the needs. Working with Joe Carbone in the state of Connecticut's programs, I was able to find a program up in Central Connecticut that met these course needs.
I see.
And I was able to take the course, all the courses I needed for the job. So therefore, when I came into the position, I was just ready to hit the floor running.
So you got the training, you got the job with that relevant job to that training. Sounds like it worked.
Oh, it was a perfect match.
But you can see how easily it might not work. I mean, what if somebody wasn't there a little bit holding your hand? What if what you aimed for, I mean, your first independent try, was it solar? And that turned out not to be there for you when you got around the bend.
Oh, yeah. And then it was like, you know, going the whole route from being laid off the pity boats again. He went right down to the bottom again. And, you know, you start getting depressed and wondering what you're going to do and how you're going to support your family and stuff like that. But there are a lot of courses that I think people aren't aware of, and I wasn't aware of.
Boy, it'll open your eyes in a hurry when you hit that panic-stricken point that Carl talks about when the job goes away. But it sounds like it worked out for you as well, and I'm glad for that, Rick. Thanks for joining us for a few minutes today.
Thank you very much.
Carl, what do you hear in that story? How common or uncommon is that? I mean, there are a lot of people who go through these programs and still end up unemployed.
Well, the last two callers' stories are wonderful, and it shows that it does happen. As I said before, unfortunately, it doesn't happen often enough, really, for probably two basic reasons. One is that there's not enough money and talent in the system to help advise people in the way that Joe Carbone's program did. There aren't enough of those kinds of programs in the country. We need more of those. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is that the labor market is extremely tough right now. So you can get a very good training program and still not succeed. I mean, we've studied college graduates for the last couple of years coming out of the best institutions in the country and not getting jobs. So it's just an unpleasant and inconvenient reality that people are going to have trouble in an economy that is really struggling. But that doesn't mean you can blame them for the economy any more than you blame the fishermen for the weather.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about job retraining in a jobless time. We're spending a lot to do it as a country. We're asking, is it working? Carl Van Horn is with us from New Brunswick, New Jersey, at Rutgers there, big in workforce development, and he has seen a lot. You can join us as well. And Carl, a lot of people writing in here. It's interesting. Here's Shay writes, who says, what a dream. Restarting your career over and over again. Every time you build some seniority, a higher wage, a few weeks vacation, bang, you get to start all over again in the next career du jour. You must hear that kind of complaint, Carl. Shay writes, my grandfather worked 37 years in a factory, made a terrific wage, raised 7 kids. Now he's retired with a fat pension, travels, hunts, no financial worries 25 years later. If I ever retire, it will be on a shoestring, Shay says. I mean, What about, Carl, the concern, complaint, worry that the economy has just changed in such a way? You can do all the retraining you want. There are not enough good jobs out there, and some people fear there will not be.
Well, actually, that description is a description of the mid-20th century in the United States that no longer exists, and our economy is very different now. Now, what we haven't done is adjust our public policies to that new reality. And that's really what we're talking about here is how do we accept the fact that the labor market is uncertain, turnover is going to be more frequent than it used to be, that we're going to have to upgrade our skills throughout our working careers. Now, all of those factors are, I think, undeniably true. And therefore, we have to have a system in place that helps people get good quality training when they need it. From both their own investments and the investment of governors and governments and employers.
So you've got a government role there, maybe. You've got a market role there. You've talked about sort of three buckets of retraining. You call them good, bad, and ugly. Describe those for us.
Well, let's start with – I think we understand what the ugly is. The ugly is the worst-case scenario where a fraudulent educational institution, probably as what we call a storefront training agency, rips people off, wastes their money, and gives them nothing.
How big an issue is that? How big a problem?
I don't think that's very common, but if there's two of them, that's or one of them, that's too many. But that does happen to people. But on the good side are the places that have a training program that's connected to a real job. Maybe actually some of the training is paid for by the government and shared with the employer. So they're actually starting to work already and learning on the job or one that is clearly directed towards a job in demand. And there are jobs in demand that we can look at a couple years and say, yes, it's a very likely possibility there's going to be a job. So they're really jobs that are connected to the employer, to the end of the benefit at the end. And it may not – the job may not, by the way, be more than what the person earned before. That dislocation may cost them some money, but they're still going to end up employed in a good job. And then in the middle, we have those kinds of jobs that don't succeed. The training doesn't succeed as well. And sometimes that's because the advice they get isn't very good. Sometimes it's because the educational program isn't really up to snuff. It's not providing industry standard training. So we have a lot to do to move that middle where there's always going to be fraud in the system. There's always criminals. There's always people that will do that and we should prosecute them. But there's a lot in the middle that we can do to help get to that good point to have a high-quality program to help people.
You know, it's easy to get frustrated with this sort of notion, well, these days Americans will just do it good enough or barely good enough. I mean, why can't we have training programs like, let's say, Germany, which I don't know perfectly, but from what I read, it looks like they've got apprentice programs and training programs, and it's so tightly buttoned up that they're turning out people with very high skills that can then continue to hang on to their manufacturing and other jobs because it's at a level that other countries have trouble competing with. Why not that here?
Well, I think we have to do it. I think that's the point because we are competing with those other industrialized advanced economies, and they're going to be taking our business away from us if we don't succeed. You know, one of the things that's important.
But we know that saying we have to do it is quite different from actually doing it. We're talking about all these things we have to do, and a lot of them we're not doing.
Well, that's true, but I'm still an eternal optimist, and I believe we will do it because this recession actually, I think, has and the aftermath of it has really exposed some of these fundamental weaknesses. Unfortunately, right now, during an election year, is not probably the best time to find bipartisan consensus. But I believe that after this, we'll be able to get there because our economy will not grow and wages will not grow and salaries will not grow unless we are able to retrain people and reposition them to be successful in a global economy.
Dominic, Lexington, Kentucky. Thanks for calling, Dominic. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for accepting my call. I'm an old mainframe programmer. I taught myself client server, and finally when the internet became universal, I decided to take an early retirement.
Okay.
But I just want to say that it wasn't very long ago when tech companies like IBM and Chubb would hire people and train them. Now, IBM was notorious for hiring music majors and training them to be systems analysts. And then when the technology changed, they would take their old people and train them for the new technology.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, to increase shareholder value or whatever, they don't do any training at all. They cry to Congress that they can't get enough people for the new technology. They get H-1B visas and whatever.
And bring in foreign talent, yeah.
Yeah, rather than train people the way they used to. And I'm thinking there's easy cure for that. Number one, restrict H-1B visas. And number two, maybe give training credits or tax credits for companies to train the way they always did in the old days.
I'm glad you remind us. That's a good history lesson, Dominic. And we've got people resonating with that kind of angle here online. Dominic, thanks. Carl, Tina, along the same line, writes to us. I mean, she's pretty tough on companies here, but she says these lazy, wealthy corporations can start to pay to train people within their corporations. Hire to train, a little less wealth, a lot better country. What about this whole notion? You know, maybe IBM did it before. You tell us, Carl, that, I mean, you know, you've got a lot of cash in companies. We've got pretty good profits. Maybe companies should be doing more of this work themselves. Have they shed that responsibility? Are they, you know, shuffling it over to the government's shoulder?
Well, they've moved out of the sort of extensive onboarding training that they used to do. They still do a lot of training of their incumbent workers, people already mm-hmm, there. Mm-hmm. And it is true, however, that they are expecting people to come more ready to work than ever before. So they have raised their expectations. And I doubt very much that in this country we're going to mandate employers to start training more. So I think that's an unrealistic suggestion. What I'm saying is instead we have to help individuals connect to employers in a partnership with government assistance to get prepared for those jobs. I think that's much more likely in the American tradition of shared responsibility. Now, I agree that employers are not doing as much as they should have. They would say that, hey, you know, we're in a global marketplace where we're competing and it's difficult for us to devote as much to training as we'd like to. So, you know, there's an argument on their side too.
I guess. I mean, maybe in the past they just didn't have the option to have this kind of work done elsewhere because we were head and shoulders above much of the rest of the world in terms of American worker capacity. But what the argument is, if we can outsource it cheaper than training to do it here, we have to do that. It's an economic imperative.
Well, their imperative is to satisfy their shareholders, not to satisfy us. So yes, if they can find a cheaper way, they're going to do it. But there are jobs, of course, that you cannot offshore, and some of those jobs are the jobs that Americans can take if they got the proper training to be prepared to be successful.
Barbara in Canandaigua, New York. Barbara, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I'd like to address the artist in our society that, you know, it's hard for us to retool to different things because we have a specific kind of talent that we're given, you know. And I'm an artist, a visual artist. I'm an educator. I went back to school in my 40s to get my master's to teach, and I'm in my 50s now. I was able to teach for a while, and then I was eliminated due to budget cuts. And now, you know, I'm thinking about what to do. I've been unemployed for 2 years. I can't get a job in education because I'm too old. They don't hire people in their 50s. I can't get a job doing other things because I have a master's degree, and I'm shut out, you know, as mm-hmm. in the market. But, you know, I'm really talented in what I do. I'm a very good artist. I'm a very good educator. And, you know, to retool to do something completely different is, it's not who I am. So I'd like to know, you know, is there some feedback about, you know, our artists and our culture who lose their positions due to all kinds of budget cuts, and, you know, then what do they do?
Barbara, we've got it. I mean, Carl, this makes it very human. Barbara looks at it from the angle of an artist, though I suppose it could be, you know, anybody who feels really attached to the career they've had, and now they don't have access to it. How do you respond to that? You know, there's a kind of work she feels blessed with talent to do, and it feels to her like it's difficult, or maybe she doesn't want to retool to go into some other neck of the woods. I'm sure it's not only artists who feel that way sometimes.
No, totally understood. There's a lot of folks in her position who have a great passion and love for what they do, and they find that either where they live or perhaps anywhere, they really can't get a job that meets that passion and that interest. Sometimes it is possible to take a half a step away from what you have your greatest interest in and be successful. Artists actually have many talents that can be applied in all kinds of venues. They're usually have great vision and ability to see things in a different way, and that may be something that she can sell out to some convince people in some other lines of work that she would really be a great contributor. But it is difficult. There are many people for whom this recession and this economy has, in a sense, moved away from them, where they want to be. And it's just a painful process of adjustment.
Don't give up, though, Barbara. There must be ways to turn that talent. Doris in Santee, South Carolina. Doris, you're on the air.
Yes, I was saying that companies like IBM are really not in the same business that they were years ago when they were doing so much training. And the other thing is people tend not to stay at jobs the way they used to. It's expensive for companies to train people, and they're not as interested in training people who are not going to stay with them.
Yep.
I guess that's all I want to say.
I appreciate that, Barbara. On the other hand, right now, an awful lot of people, if they've got a job, are sort of loath to lose it. Maybe they need retraining as well, Carl, because, you know, with the housing market as it is, it's hard to chase a job just anywhere. So people may have to stay where they are and retrain in place rather than move searching for opportunity because they're stuck.
Yeah, I think, again, in our surveys, we find that American workers understand that. They understand that. Now, their frustration is, whether they're working or not working, is how do we get to the right high-quality training program? And that's where we need to do a better job in, frankly, regulating that industry and improving the quality of services it provides to people, because we need to weed out the bad programs and celebrate the good ones and make sure that people know how to get to them.
Lebanon, Tennessee. Pete's calling. Pete, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I think y'all have left out a segment that employs more people than all your corporations put together. That's the mom and pops. There's no training program. There's no availability for somebody that's drawing unemployment to come to us and go through an OJT program, because I run a travel center.
Okay.
I get a kid out of high school, cooking school, and he wants to be the next Chef Boyardee, and he's creating things that looks good on the plate, and the truck driver looks at it and says, what's this? You know, I get a kid out of school to go up front on the computers. Mm-hmm. I've got five different computers. That's 4 months of training just to get them where they can meet the public, and I have no training money for it.
Well, Pete,
what I can't use an unemployed person, because as soon as I put them on staff, they lose their unemployment.
Right. But Pete, let me ask you, so what do you think ought to happen in that case? You're a small business owner. Isn't it sort of part of your cost of business to train people? Or do you think there should be a government program to hand you pre-trained people?
No, not pre-trained people, because we've tried to talk to the schools. But if somebody is unemployed, and I'm not talking about a kid, I'm talking about somebody that's in their 40s and 50s and can't find a job.
Right.
If they come to me and say, you know, look, I'd like to try to be a cook. Mm-hmm. I need a good job.
Mm-hmm.
Then I can hire them while they're drawing their unemployment on an OJT.
On the job training.
Like they do in Germany.
Yeah, yeah. Hey,
and they become an apprentice cook or an apprentice baker or an apprentice prep cook, and they learn, because it's not a 2 weeks and here's the spatula. It's 6 months.
No, we've got it, Pete. Our time is short. I mean, Carl, we do have some examples of this. I think in Georgia they've got training along this line, but there is that gap that Pete's quite right to point to and say, you know, how do you get past that?
Right, and that's why I say we need to reform these programs. There are some programs like this in the United States. They're very small and experimental. In most of Europe, the program that he described is commonplace. After about 3 to 6 months of unemployment in most European countries, you're required to be involved in training, and it's not an option. You have to be involved in retraining and redirecting yourself, and that's the kind of program we need. We spent $500 billion on unemployment insurance during this recession, maybe even a little more than that. But we only spend several billion dollars on training programs. Okay, so we need to change the emphasis on where the money is going,
mm-hmm.
Make it possible for people to have the sustaining wage support, but then also get the retraining they need to transition to a new job, because for many of these people, they just will not find a job unless they find new skills.
I wonder if we also have to change the focus or the kind of training. We've had an industrial sort of mindset A lot of people now are writing about an artisanal mindset, you know, that it's going to be personal trainers and massage and, you know, sort of handmade things that Americans are going to be doing. Jobs that can't be sent abroad because they're personal interaction based. Do you see the government taking that perspective on board?
Well, I think it already does. I mean, after all, people go to colleges and high schools and they're not learning to go into manufacturing. They're learning jobs that are in the service industry, whether it's finance or healthcare or whatever. I mean, most of our market is actually a service economy, but you still have to be trained to do that. For example, training to be a chef is a very important educational program because if you're going to be a very good chef, you have to have those professional skills, not the least of which is how to handle the food safely, how to prepare good quality product every day in a complex environment. So it isn't just manufacturing that you need education and training. It's most all skills in America today.
The world is changing. This challenge is not going to go away. Carl Van Horn says, let's get our system structured so it actually works for people and for the whole economy. Carl Van Horn joined us from Rutgers University out of New Brunswick, New Jersey today. Professor, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me, Tom.
Listeners, it's great to be with you. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.